It's been a real pleasure and a privilege for me to be here this morning and hear the discussions, the Sunday school discussion, the devotions and all, and how well they went together. I was very blessed, and I trust that you were too. As I was preparing for a message, actually I guess it was just yesterday sometime, I looked at the calendar and I saw that not on all of our calendars, but on one of our calendars, today was marked as a special day, and I wondered, what is that? And I looked, and it said it was Grandparents' Day. I don't know how many of you realize that. I don't know. We don't really celebrate Grandparents' Day. And thought went through my mind that perhaps I should preach to the grandparents or on honoring our elders this morning. I didn't do that. I had my sermon pretty much together by that time. But my mind continued to travel in those channels. Some, we have Father's Day, we have Mother's Day, and we preach sermons to the fathers and to the mothers, and sometimes we preach to the youth, but we don't often hear sermons directed to the older brothers and sisters, to the grandparents. And if the Lord permits, perhaps one day, sometime, we'll take a look at that. But I hope this morning that if you're here as a grandparent, or maybe even not as a grandparent, doesn't matter, and you have not brought small children along this morning that went to Sunday school or sit on your lap, or and some of the sermons we preach maybe seem or are directed more to younger families, many times they are, or to the young people. I hope that you still feel honored here this morning, and I hope that you can receive a blessing. One of the things that I learned or observed when I spent time in Honduras was how they honored the elderly. They very much respected them. You wouldn't walk past an older brother in the church without at least shaking his hand, and even the children had a special way of shaking hands with the grandparents, with the older people. And I think we lost some of that. And so today, Grandparents' Day, I want to give a special welcome to our grandparents and to all the elderly people here today. We are privileged to have you here with us, and I hope that you don't ever feel forgotten and unnecessary. We appreciate having you here, and we're glad that you're here. We feel honored to have your presence here with us this morning. For some thoughts for a message this morning, you may open your Bibles to Romans chapter 12. These are only introductory verses, packed full. We could definitely preach a sermon from these first two verses, but I only want to read them in introducing the message and maybe come back to them later. But Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, you may know these by heart. If you don't, they are good verses to know by heart, and not just to memorize, but to endeavor to live out in everyday life. Romans 12, verse 1 says, "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." I want to pull a few thoughts here from verse 2 about being conformed to this world and being transformed by the renewing of our minds. I wonder if in today's day and age, if we even think about this sometimes, if we even realize what all this implies. Not to be conformed by the world, but to be transformed by the renewing of our mind. To be conformed or to conform something simply means to behave in a way that is accepted by most people and to do what other people do. Simple. That's being conformed, to behave in a way that is accepted by most people and to do what other people do. To be transformed is to be changed completely and usually in a good way. And in this morning, we're definitely talking about it in a good way. To be transformed, not to do what the world accepts, not to do what they do and is accepted of those around us, even in quote Christianity. Not to do what is accepted by most people. Sometimes it will be, sometimes it won't be. Let's not let that be our driving motive in life, what's accepted and what's expected of in our communities, but to be completely changed in a good way by the renewing of our minds, having the renewed mind. And that, of course, is having the mind that Christ had. Being completely changed, transformed by the renewing of our mind. And it doesn't say it here in these verses, but having, putting on the mind of Christ. Now, we want to talk about not being conformed and being transformed in one area this morning. Like I said, we could easily spend a whole sermon on these thoughts. The title of the message this morning, and I hope you can follow this and that you don't begrudge me using it in this way, is simply viewing technology with a transformed mind. Okay? Now, I want to simply take the thoughts here of not being conformed, not being pressed into a mold that people expect, but being transformed and being something different. And then how is that affecting our view of technology and what the world expects today, what the standard is? Now, technology is a kind of a scary subject to preach about, and it's actually a word that might get you into trouble, because technology, the way we use it, we often think of it. When I said the word technology, I would guess, I'm guessing that your mind's probably jumped to computers and smartphones. That's definitely modern-day technology. Technology, by dictionary definition, is the use of science in industry, engineering, etc., to invent useful things or to solve problems. So technology is good, right? That's the dictionary definition. That's all mine. Well, there were some more definitions, but that's what it said. The use of science in industry, engineering, and etc., to invent useful things or to solve problems. And then I added to it. This is my addition. Or to increase the never-ending and unquenchable desire of man to be entertained. Now, that was simply my little rant there on the end. But we have to deal with this. We have to deal with this. Let me ask this question right now. I was going to ask it later, but let me ask it right now. And maybe we'll answer it later. Is technology good or is it evil? Okay, try and answer that in your mind. We're going to talk about it in a little bit. I drew a timeline here on the board, and I know it's a rough sketch. And I would like to look at just a few, not nearly all, but just a few inventions all technology inventions have changed our lives today in one way or another, but things that are still, that we're going to be able to relate to, okay, that are still... Maybe being used today, or at least set the stage for something that is being used today. And you'll notice I put blue marks on here wherever I want to write something up. And you're going to notice that almost all the marks, well, all of them, are from 1850 on, and I started back at 1500. The reason I did this is because I want to impress us with how recent some of the things are that we just take for granted. That's one of the reasons. And neither could I go back to creation, or everything that we would want to talk about would be in about, I think it was less than an inch and a half of space on the timeline, so that's almost impossible. I thought about going back a little farther. Oh, all of our timeline would have been 4 inches long, I think, of what's on the board today. But if you go back to about, mentally travel back with me to about 1500, you'll know that 1492, all of you school students, in fact, probably all of you should recognize that date when Columbus discovered America, we say. And then in the early 1500s, well, through the 1500s, there were quite a number of explorations in the New World, so on and so forth. There were from Spain and from England, well, from Great Britain and from Portugal and so on. There were a lot of explorers. We read about that. We study that in history. Then there's actually a time here that, well, we know some of the things that happened in the church, but that I don't think we read as much about. And then we come here to about the middle of the 1800s. We see some things being invented that we still either use today or have grown into things that we use today. And I'd like to look at that just a little bit this morning. By the way, when I first was going to draw a timeline, I thought about starting at 1000 because that's when you leave the New Testament. And there isn't much written. There's some, you can find some things, but from 1000 or I'm sorry, from the New Testament, from the end of the New Testament to 1000 AD, we don't have much recorded in history at all. We have a little bit, we have some writings and all, but then in about 1000, we have some of Marco Polo's writings and so on. But it's pretty vague. We don't have a lot of history there. We have a few things written, but we don't have a lot. In just before our timeline, I say just before, in 1440, if you remember what happened then, was the printing press was invented. Now, that was just the first one. It took a while before printing was very economical and where there was a lot of newspapers being printed and all. But then we have more recorded history, okay? We know a little more what was going on because things were printed. If everything had to be handwritten, obviously we would have less history, less than what we do today. Some things have been reconstructed. All right, the first one I have here, the date was 1861. This is the only one I have up here that you won't find today anymore. This was, one more disclaimer, yet before I tell you what it was, is that some of these dates I used just one date where it should have been maybe a line on the timeline here, but when they became popular. In other words, okay, in 1861 we had the telegraph, all right, being put to use. Now, we don't use telegraphs anymore, and it's kind of grew into something. It was not necessarily, I guess you could call it the predecessor of texting. But the telegraph, from the telegraph, of course, came the technology for the telephone, and that's going to be our next one. Now, you might not feel like that has a lot of bearing on your life today, but if you had lived in a day when it was put into use, you would have thought that it was a real leap in technology. Think about the alternatives that were in that day. A telegraph to us would seem very, very primitive and slow. It would probably be good for us. Rather than whipping out our phone and texting someone, you would have to write it down and either carry it to the office or else send someone with it and pay the man. I believe it was per word, if I'm not mistaken, generally. Per letter, perhaps. I'm not sure because it was sent by the Morse code. And then they would send that to whatever city was the closest to whoever you want to send your telegram to, and then a messenger would have to take it out and knock on the door and hopefully find someone at home, right, and give them the message. And then if you wanted to answer, I've read stories, I don't know how accurate they are, but that he would wait sometimes, and you could write a response and send it back with him, and it would send it back. All right. That would seem pretty primitive to us today, but what were the options? Mail. The Pony Express was in place before this for a few years, just not long at all, but sending a message, writing it down, and sending it with someone that was going that way. And imagine, let's just imagine that you lived halfway across the continent, your brother had moved out west, and let's say perhaps your father died unexpectedly of a heart attack, okay? With no telegraph, nothing like that, it could have taken a long time before you found out news like that or before you could relay news like that, right? The telegraph definitely did a lot to change people's life. Now, we don't use telegraphs anymore, but we do use telephones. Some of us still do. Again, this is not when it was invented, but when it became, I hope that you can read. If not, try to make mental note here. And that was 1880 when it was put into, it was invented a few years before this, but 1880 is when telephones began to be used, I don't know if you'd call it commercially, but be installed in people's homes. And for the good of the younger generation here, myself included, they weren't cordless. They were very different than our phones today. Some of you older people are going to remember a lot more about this than I do, and please bear with me as I try to walk through some of this. We're going to get into some things that you remember and I don't here soon, but this is one thing that I don't remember, and I don't think any of you remember when it came out either, but a two-piece where you held a cup-looking thing to your ear and spoke into a, well, it would have been a microphone, whatever, to carry your voice to the other end. Help me out here. These very first ones would have operated on a platform of a party line, right? Is that right? Where you had your ring? Oh, and a crank, yeah, all right. I don't remember, well, obviously, I remember seeing these in museums and all. I do remember a telephone, though, in my short life that you would, you'd take the rotary dial, and we used that in our home long after they were considered kind of outdated, but we had one at home. All right, and then you would have spoken to an operator, right? He would have, he or she would have connected you to the right line, and then by the ring, they would know who was supposed to pick up, and sometimes other people did too, at least according to stories I've heard, but that was how the phone was. But that changed people's life. Can you imagine the difference in your home when a telephone came in? No more trips, no more telegrams, and no more trips to the telegraph office. We had a telephone, and I am sure that people made more phone calls than telegrams that they sent because of the convenience. All right, they started to depend on it. In 1908, I'm going to write this in as, I'm going to just draw right up through 1900 here. We have the automobile, and the reason I picked, I'll just write auto. Okay, for autos, automobiles, cars. The reason I picked 1908 is that's when the first Model Ts rolled out. Okay, there were vehicles invented before that, but this is when they started to become to where you might have actually been able to afford one, buy one. They did not race up and down the road at 75 or 80 mile an hour. In fact, they had 20 horsepower, all of 20 horsepower you had to cruise up and down the pothole-filled dirt streets, all right? And but they did grow into something that we have today. I say grow into, whatever. We still use automobiles, of course. 1920s, and I just drew somewhere in the middle. I think this would have ended up being 1925. 1920s, we had the radio was introduced. The technology was there before 1920s. Earlier on, there were some early experiments that you could have called radios, radio transmissions, but this is when the first commercial broadcast happened in the early 1920s, according to what I read, and television in the 1930s. We'll abbreviate that TV. We're used to that abbreviation. I'm not sure what all to say about the changes that must have brought. I'm going to save some of the changes that must have brought. We're going to save for just a little bit because we're going to talk about it down here in a little bit later. But news being passed. See, before the radio or television, and they came very close together. You can see it would have been word of mouth, newspapers, so on. It would have been a lot slower. Whereas radio, and you think of some of the radio broadcasts like during wartime and all, it made a huge difference. Okay, you could reach a lot of people at one time. I had a hard time picking a date for this, but in the 50s. Which seems, I went back and looked at this a couple times because it seems really, really recent, is when the commercial airplanes began to be used a lot in commercial flights. Now, there were flights before that, okay? The Wright brothers took their first flight in 1903, but when you read about their flight and that it would have fit inside of a 747, it kind of tends to, that was really early on, all right? They weren't ready to cruise across the Atlantic and not even think about drowning, right? Maybe some of us still think about that when you get on an airplane, I don't know. But for myself, we do it. We use that way of travel. And so that was the first commercial use of the Boeing 707, which was the first modern, modern airliner. We can call it that. I think you understand. Now, from 53 to 57 in the late 50s, we'll just use 50s here again, we had computers. Now, I probably put this one on pretty early but they did change our lives, even though we didn't have them in homes. They did change people's lives, even though it was some huge machine that you would have never been able to afford or ever learn how to operate. They were being used or started being used in some processes in manufacturing and things like that. We started to have computer technology, and it would take over what it took several men to do, right? And speed things up. But that was the very early days of computers. And then in 1990, I don't know if this is really an invention or not. Just put this in here. But I'm going to put it up here. I'll abbreviate it. The World Wide Web. I didn't use the internet because that more, okay, because internet is actually, we use the word internet, and that's fine. I could have put it up there. We didn't know what we were talking about. But that's when we started linking computers to computers, okay? And you know what that has grown into. Now, I want to take just a few moments here. I asked the question if technology is good or evil, and I don't know. You've had a little bit of time to think through that. I don't know what your first answer would have been. Mine probably, the very, very first thought, would have been depends what technology you're talking about. And maybe that's right, but I think generally we need to come to grips with this. We need to understand this first before we move into the rest of the message, is that technology in itself is probably neither, or generally it's neither. All right, but we have to understand that the more technology we have, the more evil men are going to find ways of promoting evil. Okay, and good can also be promoted. I'm not trying to hide that fact, but we need to understand it's what's being promoted, not the technology itself. Now that can make it kind of difficult to draw lines and make decisions, but I think it's less difficult than if we ignore that fact and we try and decide, well, now, for instance, the radio, is it evil or is it good? The TV, is it evil or is it good? And then you get to other things and, well, you don't know whether evil or good. It's what's being broadcast or it's what's being promoted by technology that makes it evil or good. For instance, the TV, you've noticed this already if you have children or had. They'll be looking at a book and say, oh, there's a TV, that's bad, okay? Where did they get that? Well, they got it from you, whether you like it or not, okay? They did, because we don't have. But and maybe they're too small to understand that it's the reason that we don't have it in our homes is because the constant bombardment of evil. But can we say that everyone that has a TV is evil? Well, no, we wouldn't want to. And we try to help our children through this to understand that Perhaps they don't understand. Perhaps they're Christian. Sometimes we don't even know how to explain it to them. While we feel that there are dangers there, that we don't want a TV in our home, we can't say that a television in itself, because it would be possible to have a television. Okay, I should back up and explain that. If there were no evil being broadcast on television, then television wouldn't be evil, right? No, it's what's being broadcast on it that we see dangers in it, of course. And I think we understand that. All right, I have four general statements about technology, and then I'm just going to tell you where we're going with this. I have some exhortations to our use of technology, and that would be modern-day technology. But technology, we could go way back. It's probably always been, I don't know if it's safe to say always, because in times of persecution and all, there probably wasn't much focus on the church on technology. Okay, it was on survival, and so they didn't have to. They probably weren't dealing a lot with what was coming in. But technology did not start on the timeline here, on what we have here. Not at all. I simply drew this way with all the empty space so that we could understand. If I would have stretched it all back, it wouldn't have shown us some of the things that we take for granted today and that we use without ever thinking. We kind of think that they existed since Noah almost. I mean, we know better, but are very, very recent, okay? But this is not the beginning of technology, not in any way. In fact, anything that made work easier, anything that saved time, is technology, and that happened probably shortly after creation, shortly after the fall, I would think. Surely that there was some technology invented by that definition. All right, the first statement, though, that I want to make about a blanket statement, you might be able to find some holes in some of these, but general statements about technology that I want us to understand. First one is technology is progressive, and I want you to understand the use of the word progressive here so we don't misunderstand this. In my short lifetime, okay, I'm 33 years old, and many of you can claim many more years than what I have and seen a lot more changes than I have, but I thought of just a few changes. I saw one thing grow into the other. I remember at home, I remember the rotary dial phone. It was a little bit outdated. And then we had a regular phone. And then I remember getting a first cordless phone, and it was neat. It was fascinating. You could go into the next room, into the living room, and still talk on the phone. The phone was in the kitchen, dining room. You couldn't really go upstairs and close the door because it got too fuzzy and you couldn't use it anymore. But that was our first cordless phone, and it was quite something. And then I remember I think the next thing was when we got our first cell phone, okay? We, I said, got our first cell phone, okay? We went to Hattiesburg, and we bought a cell phone that was a good bit bigger than my Bible case. And that's what we used. And then it wasn't long till people came around with ones on their belts. They were only about that big. I remember of my dad asking about it at the cell phone store, and they said, "Oh, you don't want one of those. They'll work when you're in town, but they don't have very good signal when you get, you know, outside of town. You better stick with your bag phone." And we did for a little while. And then, of course, obviously, phones got, then soon after that, I remember of a gadget coming in the mail. I think this was after the first cell phone. It was a box it was white, and it was about yay big, and some of you are going to remember it too. And it was a gadget that you could plug into the phone and your phone line into it, phone line out of it, of course, into your phone line, and it would tell you who was calling before you answered the phone. All right? But you had to pay several dollars a month to use it. Of course, it was caller ID. And I remember being fascinated by that. We didn't have it. I thought we should. I wasn't paying the phone bill. But I remember of it making an impression on me. That was technology. That was neat. If only we could have a box like that and we could see who was calling before you answered, you could play all kinds of tricks on people. And then, of course, we got our small cell phones. And now we have touch screens, right? We can do way more on our phones than what we ever dreamt a few years ago. And just a thought here, cell phones got smaller and smaller and smaller, and now we got touch screens, and just an interesting note on the trend here, they got bigger and bigger and bigger, not quite to the size of our old bag phone, but some of them are getting there. All right, it's progressive. Now, what I want us to understand here is that we are not talking about evolutionary, okay? One thing builds on another. Man is not getting smarter and smarter, and because you can operate a cell phone and you can open a garage door 30 miles away or look up where the location of your friends are and figure all kinds of things out does not mean that you're smarter than people that lived in the 1700s and 1800s. Not at all. In fact, if you had to build that phone, you'd be licked. Okay, I'm pretty certain of that. And take airplanes for example. They've come a long ways. But do you think there's any man that works at Boeing that could build an airplane by himself? I really, really, really doubt it. There's people that can design them and all, but I really doubt. And then if he did, he would still have to know how to extract the ore and make his metals and wires and all of that. Okay, but it builds as we learn more about one area, learn more about other, and we build on what people that went before us knew and invented. We call that progression. Okay, one thing they make it, I guess we can say better and better and better, at least do more things, and the technology gets smaller and smaller. A lot of things do. Takes less space. But it's because we're building on what people before us have put into use or into practice. And actually, if you'll take notice of technology fields, they've gotten smaller and smaller. In other words, they're more and more specialized. If you think that you are smarter than people that lived in the 1700s and 1800s because of the technology we have, I think it would be interesting to try. I'm not sure how long to take four cows and a pig and just a few things that they had and make your living, okay? Actually, they had to have a lot broader understanding than what we do. They did. Like it or not, they did. Of skills that they needed to have. All right, we need to keep moving. It's progressive. It is also quickly outdated. Technology is it's getting faster and faster, but what was the cutting edge of technology is quickly outdated, and you can see that. Computers, in just a few short years, we'd laugh and would never put up with one like that anymore. We just replaced a computer, we did. One of the computers suddenly realized we couldn't run an operating system on that we needed to run our computer programs, and it got retired, okay? It was outdated in relatively short years. Look at the phones that you carry around. I really, really, really doubt there's even any bag phones in use today. I really doubt it. And that wasn't that many years ago. Our vehicles. Look how quickly the brand new vehicle that caught your eye just a few years ago, young men, looks kind of tacky now. because there's much better. It's quickly outdated. And manufacturers and vendors love this fact, okay, because it drives sales. That's why when a new phone comes out, it's not a new phone, just a new version of a phone, that Apple will rent a stadium just, I think it was this last week, that seats 7,000 people just to introduce the functions that this improved phone can do. And it can actually fill up a stadium. They use it as a marketing thing because no one wants to be left behind, of course. Number three, technology quickly becomes a necessity. If you don't agree with me, let me ask you what you did last time. You were driving down the road a few miles from home and you remember you forgot your cell phone. Almost without considering, you stepped on the brakes, turned around and went home and got it, probably, unless you were too far from home, and then it bothered you that no one could get a hold of you if they really needed you. You need it. If your car would have broken down yesterday, you would have lined up someone to pick you up and bring you to church or something because you didn't have a horse that you could bring, probably, and walking was out of the question. You need a vehicle to get to church, right? Actually, you don't, but we think we do. It becomes a necessity almost before we know what happened. In the world, and just a thought on it becoming a necessity, in the world there's about 7 billion, 12 million people. That was in 13. And there were 6.8 billion cell phones. 6.8 billion cell phones, 7 billion people. In the United States in 14, there were, catch this number, the population was 317,874,000. Of course, that's approximate. 327 million cell phones, more cell phones than people. There was 103.1 cell phones for every 100 people, and some countries actually have higher than that. In the United Kingdom, it's 129.6 cell phones per 100 people. That would include infants on up. Becomes a necessity pretty quick. Number three, technology can replace, now these are blanket statements, okay? It replaces the blessings of family and community. The more technology we have, the easier we can do things. There's a blessing being lost. And when you hear older people talking about the good old days, I've come to the conclusion, one of the things I think that really bothers people, whether they really know what it is or not, is the sense of community that's just been lost, all right? We do things for ourselves. We own our own equipment. We have our own vehicles. We don't call on our neighbors. When's the last time you called a bunch of your neighbors together to help something out or just stopped in? No, we live in our own little world. Social networking had a lot to do with that. And it's happened before that, I understand, with vehicles and all. But of people making better friends halfway across the world than they do with their neighbors. They don't even know their names. It happens. It seems strange, but it does. And it has replaced a sense of community and family values. I got to witness this firsthand in Honduras. I remember when I was there as a VSer, driving down a road, and there was, I don't know, probably at least 20 people, maybe 30, all trying to see in a little window about this big. And I wonder whatever is going on there. And somebody said, oh, that's the pulperia, the little store that they had in that village. And they have a TV inside there. So naturally, everybody wants to see what's happening, right? I came home for a few years. Oh, and we didn't have cell phones either, okay? We had a two-way radio. Talk about being open and accountable. But went back a few years later. Cell phones had become very popular and affordable. TVs were everywhere. And dirt bikes, there were almost none of them before. We had the only one in the village, actually. And now they were everywhere. And it was amazing to me. I shouldn't have been amazed, but I was. The difference that happened in the village. People didn't know each other. They didn't stop and visit like they used to. They were all busy about their own things. Something had changed. It changed rapidly, more rapidly than it did here in the States, I believe, because of the how quick some of those changes came. And the sense of community was not gone, but greatly diminished. And last of all, on those notes, I have technology threatens our dependence on God. Is that true? How many of you read stories from a number of years ago of people that were in tight situations and they prayed earnestly for for help, and you thought it sounded kind of funny because, or not funny, but strange, because all you would have done is whipped out your cell phone and called help, or gotten a vehicle and went for help, or whatever. When's the last, where do you turn? And I don't think it's wrong to get out your cell phone in an emergency and call quickly. I'm not saying that you have to pray every time before you use your cell phone. I'm not saying that. We need God just as much, okay? But do we understand it? Do we actually depend on Him? And this can go into other areas. We carry credit cards around. We carry cell phones. We carry, we have our vehicles. And probably if one breaks down, you have another one. You can just jump in and use that one. Most of us do. And I wonder sometimes, no, I don't wonder. I know that in my own life, it threatens my dependence upon God. All right, we must move on quickly to the to some of the things about modern technology. And this is going to deal with the more modern things, a few cautions that I want to throw out, exhortations I called them, for the use of modern technology. Let's make sure that in our use of modern technology, we are applying the principles of godly speech. Number one, the principles of godly speech. The Bible says that we will be called into... we will give account of every idle word. Do you think that that might also apply perhaps to the things that we email and text around? Sure it will. And the things we forward on, and the things that we, I hope we don't, but paste on social media, on social networking, on media? Of course it does. Let's be careful. We will give account for every idle word. I was going to read those verses. I'll just read this one. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. I wonder what it would be like for us. I think it would do us all a lot of good, myself first of all, to throw away the modern technology for a few days and actually have to walk to the telegraph office to send a message to someone else. And see what it does for us. One thing it would have to do for us is make us aware how easily and how much we communicate. And that's not all bad. I'm not painting it as all bad, but we do have to be careful. In 2 Timothy, he gave this especially to the young men, young people especially, sound speech which cannot be condemned. All right, let's make sure that our communication is what it should be, whether... It's what we're talking about, or easier, what we're texting back and forth, whatever way it is. Let's remember that we will give an account for that. Secondly, let's make sure that we are living our lives consistently. And I didn't know how else to put this, but let's be consistent with technology. I have heard criticisms, and you have too. I know you have, of people. I'm going to be blunt this morning. I hope that you can understand where I'm going with this. People that will ride down the road in a horse and buggy because that's what they believe they should do, playing a radio and surfing the internet on their cell phone. Okay, something seems inconsistent, perhaps. I've heard that being ridiculed. But what about your neighbors that know that you don't have a TV in the home? They know you don't have a radio, and yet you know just as much about the presidential debates. You know just as much about what's going on the news. You know just as much, maybe even the foolishness, what's going on, because they know that you can watch on your internet and right down to your cell phone the same reporters that they watch, you can watch right here on the news app and know what's going on. How do you think that might strike someone? You can go onto YouTube and see the same foolishness that they watch on TV and the same filth. And if you've ever used YouTube for a training video or something, you're trying to program something you want to see, I don't know if it's 10 times out of 10, but at least 9 times out of 10, over here on the list of other views is something that's not fit to watch. You can know the same thing that's being broadcast on the radio, you can download on your cell phone, and it's called a podcast. The only danger here is not what other people are thinking. There's a conditioning happening right here. It seems different for me. I'll tell you, it seems different for me to get out my phone and pull up a video on a hurricane or whatever. There's something in my mind that seems different than turning on the news and watching it on a television. There's something, but I don't know how much difference there is, because the same reason that we throw out TV because of all the evil that's broadcast on there pops up on my phone too. Not all of it. Some of it can be blocked. Maybe not quite to the same extent, but it's there. Let's be consistent. Let's take the rules, what we say we stand for, and the evils, and let's apply it. Let's apply it to no matter what the technology is. All right, thirdly, we can't spend nearly enough time on this as what we should, but let's maintain our moral integrity. And some of these, I just wrote them down how they came to me. Let's maintain our moral integrity. Job had some wonderful insights here in the Old Testament already and way back. He said that he made a covenant with his eyes. I made a covenant with my eyes. Why then? Why should I? Let me start all over. I made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? For what portion of God is there from above? And what inheritance of Almighty from on high? Is it not the destruction of the wicked? And so on. Job understood something here that we need to understand today, and that is that destroying our moral integrity and becoming defiled takes no physical action. Why should he even look upon a maid? And Matthew is very clear on this. Jesus' very own teaching that said that someone that looks upon a woman to lust after her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And I don't think there's ever been a time, maybe you would disagree, but I don't think there's ever been a time when it would have been easier, I was going to say young men, but all of us, to look upon a maid, okay? And whether that's in reality or whether it's something that you intended to look at or whether it's something that you never intended to see but saw and dwelled on, it all falls under, it all falls under this. Not saying that there's never something that you saw that you wish you wouldn't have, that you didn't make a conscious choice to look at. That can happen, but it is easier than ever. And one of the things that has made it easier than ever is take your mouse or your touch screen, whatever it is, and click on delete history, okay, and it's done, right? And now it's all taken care of. No, it's not taken care of. It's a trick that we think that it is. Maybe. I don't know. I know that you could have always bought magazines and all. I understand that. But I think there's a barrier there that is harder to cross. Let me just say it that way. Harder to cross than it is in the electronic age. I think I'm going to leave it at that. Oh, I'm sorry. One more thought on this. There's also the thought in Scripture in Romans. Not only those that commit filthy acts, but those that take pleasure in them that do them. And that is all over our media today, in whatever way. Let's be careful with that. Let's apply principles of openness and accountability, even in our digital age. Proverbs 28:13, and I know this is talking about open sin, but he says, "He that covereth his sins shall not prosper, but whoso confesseth and forsaketh them shall have mercy." I know this morning, in my own life, and I'm sure it applies in yours also, the moment that you resist, is the word I wanted, someone knowing what's going on your phone or your computer or in your life, you are setting yourself up for failure. It just is that way. If you resist that, why wouldn't we want to be open? If we're serious, it shows our thoughts, our attitudes on this. If we're serious about being pure, if we're serious about staying away from just simple foolishness and nonsense, if we're serious about not spending too much time on these things, then why wouldn't we want our brethren to know what's going on? We're setting ourselves up for failure when we begin to resist that. There's a computer screen at work that's connected to a computer, and there is a keyboard and mouse to it, but we don't use it except when my dad, who lives in New York, logs on from remotely and pays bills or whatever, and you can see what's going on the screen, and it looks kind of amusing. And sometimes when you're walking by it, you stop and you take a look and grin and walk on. And I had to wonder to myself, what if there was a screen somewhere that everything that I did on my electronic gadget, whatever it is, someone would be able to see, and I would never know who's watching or if anyone's watching. What would that do for you? Would you be okay with that this morning? Should be. I should be. Someone could see how long, what I looked at, And it doesn't have to be filth. The foolishness that I looked at, the whatever it is, the drag racing or the truck pour, whatever, that I clicked on in a moment of, I know I would stop twice. I know I would. Stop and think twice before I open something. I've heard of people did that for accountability in their own homes in another room or something, so they never knew whether someone was watching the screen or not. I'm not saying you have to do that this morning, but that level of openness should not bother us. Number five, be a good steward of your time. Does that have anything to do with technology? It has a lot to do with technology. I'm going to pull just one. I found, you know what? I went on the internet to get these. I hope that was all right. I used technology in preparing for the sermon. I typed them up. I printed them out. Anyway, the average American spent in 2013, I believe is what year it was. I don't have it written down here, but it's okay. In 2013, I believe it was, the average American spent 162 minutes on their mobile device per day. 32% of this was in gaming, playing games. I don't know how much of it was in social media. A lot of it, I'm sure. A lot of time. That was the 32% of the Americans between 16 years and 26 years old. Once you got to 26 to 52, or 26, whatever the ages were, it dropped a lot, and then the older ones dropped even more considerably. Number one, probably because they don't use them as much, and it might have had to do with age. It also had to do with probably not being used to them as much, the electronic gadgets. By the time our young people are that old, I don't know what will happen. But anyway, in those 16 years, they spent 25 hours a month or 13.2 24-hour days on their devices in a year. In those 16 years total, they would have spent 2.5 years continuously without stopping to sleep or anything on their electronic device. Just in gaming, they would have spent 4.4 months. All right, hopefully we don't use ours that much, but even if you, do you think there's a possibility that on a day you might spend an hour on your computer or on your phone? You think there is? I challenge you to see, because I have a feeling it's going to be more than what you think. I took this challenge recently, but anyway, some of your phones have that tracking. You can see how much it was used, how much of it was talk time, and how much of it was punching the screen. If you use it an hour a day in the same period, you would have still used 15 days each year, 24-hour days, and two-thirds of a year in those same 16 years, you would have spent two-thirds of a year goofing off with your electronic device. Give account for that time one day. And then I had the question, how many of us have ever found ourselves here, men, this on you especially, goofing off with that, and then it came and it got late, and then there was no time for family worship. I've been there, okay? See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, making the most of the time these days, because, why? Because the days are evil, and certainly that applies today. One practical suggestion here yet, and then I have one more point, and that is, there's a number of ways that you can do this. One thing that I think I want to be careful. What has been helpful to me and what I say is a must. But one thing that I think has been extremely helpful is take your phone in the evening when you get home from work and have a designated spot for it and put it there. And then if you need something, go use your phone. You will be surprised how many times you're sitting there and you're going, oh, yeah, I don't have it. Well, that's all right. I don't need to know what the weather's going to be like tomorrow anyway. Or whatever it is. When you have to get up and go and get your phone and it's amazing how many things, and it's amazing how many times you reach for your phone and you realize you don't even know why you're reaching for it, just to get it out. Maybe you won't. I hope you won't. But I challenge you to try that. Put a limit on your computer. It's very, very, very simple to do. You can download it for free, numbers of them. Filters that have a built-in how much time you can spend. And if you think, well, what about if I run into an emergency and I need more time on my computer? What did the poor people back there do? And maybe someone in your house can have the password if there isn't a legitimate need. But not only content, but time here, I think, is we often think of the content that can be viewed. I think a time filter is a good thing, too. All right, number six. Let's make sure we are setting a precedent. I wrote precedent or a worthy example for the following generation. Look back here. I want to show you something. The telegraph was invented. The telephone was invented. The church accepted those things, right? Sure they did. Automobiles. There was probably some. There are some groups that still haven't, but accepted those things. Radio came along. The church said, I'm saying the church, okay? Our Anabaptist forefathers said no. At least somewhere along the line, they said, we're not going to have the radio. Came to the TV. No, we're not going to have the TV. Airplanes. They didn't see a danger in that, right? We ride airplanes. It's fine. Computers. Midway in. And we have the internet, the World Wide Web. Do you see? Look at these things up here and think how you are influenced to think about these things. Do you go to Walmart and think about whether you should really take a TV home, whether that would be a good thing or not? Have we ever discussed it at brothers' meeting whether we should allow TVs? Have we ever even talked about whether we should reconsider our stand on the radio? I don't remember of anything like that in the history of brothers' meetings. We are setting up today, we are setting up something that's going to be a given in just a few years. In fact, it might be already. And what's acceptable and what's not. Think about that. That's challenging to me. In your own families, you might feel like you don't have much say or control in this. In what gets decided. I understand that, what the church decides. I do understand that. But none of us can get away, especially again over here to the men, can get away from the from being responsible in our homes, what we are going to allow in our homes. And this one came home to me. Don't think that whether you have teenagers already or whether you have small children that you're holding on your lap, don't think that you can sit there gritting and chuckling at your phone and oh, what, were you talking to me and that kind of thing. And then when they get a phone, say, now I want to know what's happening on there. While they need to accept dad's authority, I understand that, and while they are more accountable to you than you are to them in some ways, that's true, but we're going to have to set an example. We're going to have to. If they see dad all the time pulling out the phone and checking on things, and they don't know what. That's the thing. If I'm sitting here reading a newspaper, you can pretty much know, or a book, you know what I'm doing, but when I have out my little gadget and doing something, you have to be at the right spot, and I can hit the close button, and you don't know what was going on, right? Let's set an example. Not only set up guidelines for our children, let's set an example today so that there will be a precedent for tomorrow. We didn't go over near everything. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for keeping you this long. I simply want to go back one more time and look at the two verses that we started out with. Simply going to read them. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, not what the world thinks and what they think we ought to be doing, but be transformed by the renewing of our mind, of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Let's kneel for prayer.